and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick, we are 2 weeks away from the All-Star Game, so today we are going to focus on the All-Star Game. But before we get into that, do you have any hopefuls for the Home Run Derby? I know we just had Junior Caminero announce that he will be playing in the Home Run Derby, but are there any other dudes that you're, if you had your ideal Home Run Derby field, that you'd just love to see in that event?
First name that comes to mind, and really the only one, is Nick Kurtz right now. I want to see him. I think he'd put on a show. I mean, obviously, like, there's like the names, like, you know, Schwarber's got to do it in Philly. You know, obviously Ohtani would be fun if he would do it. He's not going to do it, I don't think. Who else is, I'm trying to think. But yeah, I think Nick Kurtz would be a good one. Caminero is obviously a good choice. But yeah, I love something about left-handed hitters in the Home Run Derby. I like definitely skew more left-handed, friendly in the Home Run Derby. Maybe out because I was lefty. I don't know. But yeah, it's, you know, guys like Kurtz and Schwarber, I feel like that's, you know, it's been a shame that Murakami's been out, because that obviously would have been
a fun one. That's what I was
going to
say.
And yeah, he might, I mean, he could maybe be healthy for that, but there's no way they're going to let him participate in that. Mm-hmm. So, but maybe next year, hopefully at some time, we get Murakami, because yeah, he feels like one of those guys who could make a serious run. The way his power is built and the way his swing's built. So yeah, I don't know. Do you have anyone? I'm definitely missing like obvious ones, but
I think I wanted to say Murakami. I think Jack Caglione would be a cool one too. He hits the ball really hard.
Yeah.
I could definitely see him going in it, because usually you'll have guys that get a little jaded when they get older. They're like, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. I feel like it affects my swing or whatever. So I think there's a lot of guys like that. I feel like Jorge Soler is a good, like, underrated guy who's just so pure power that he would be a little bit fun in there. There's also the part of me that wants to see somebody like Luis Arraez be in the Home Run Derby, just because, you know, he's not really known for his power. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would have loved to see Ichiro in the Home Run Derby. Yeah. To see what he can do.
People claim he would have won. Yeah. I mean, I know there's, I think Caglione, I wonder if it eventually, I don't want it to become like the dunk contest of, you know, like the dunk contest is now just like no names, but like guys who are like can dunk, and like, you just get like guys like, I mean, Caglione's having a good year, but like, you know, just get those guys who are like BP,
Spencer Jones,
machines. yeah, just straight exit velo,
right?
Numbers and bat speed numbers, and see who can hit the ball the furthest the most times. But yeah, Caglione probably. I mean, he probably deserves a chance too. And it's like I liked O'Neill Cruz last year, because, you know, obviously the exit velo numbers plus the just like the guys who are also like kind of athletic. Help. I feel like that definitely helps you know, it's further on. But yeah,
not like get exhausted.
Yeah. So yeah, no, Cags would be fun.
Yeah. I think Jordan Walker would be pretty fun too. Bryce Eldridge, even, that would be.
Yeah. That's another, just get like the 6'7".
Yeah. Get all the sluggers in there.
Big dudes through. Yeah. Just monster exit velos. Yeah. I'm down for that.
All right. So I think we got some good prospects for the Home Run Derby. Definitely excited to see who ends up in that tournament. That's usually my highlight of the All-Star weekend. I mean, there is the MLB draft, which is cool in its own right. Definitely different. Not something that you're inviting all the boys over to watch. But it feels like, to me, like, I don't know, World Series is cool, but okay, maybe that's the wrong comparison right now. Because for me, I've always had people over for the Home Run Derby in a similar to like the Super Bowl or something, where I'll just have my friends over even if they don't care about baseball, because I feel like that's the one where people are going to come and watch and they're just going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty good time. So I love the Home Run Derby. And I know that they're changing some of the rules this year. They're going back to outs.
Yeah, it's back to kind of the older way, which I'm fine with. It might make it a little bit longer, but like I want to see guys who just like rush through it and you don't get the best swings out of guys. I want to see, you know, that way back when like Josh Hamilton hit 400 home runs in a round, like something like the chance for that to happen. You know, I think that's that's cooler than, you know, just going, you know, 5 minutes and, you know, going from there. But yeah, I think there's definitely going to be a good. I know PCA was another one. I know he said he won't do it, but like there's another like a guy who's like athletic with good. You know, I feel like he could make a run. That's like something, you know, a guy like him could probably excel at. But
sure,
yeah, there's a good group. I mean, Yordan Alvarez. There's a lot of good guys this year. Will be fun. And I do like the change that they made. I didn't hate the old system or the newer system that they had last year at the time. But I want to see these guys take, you know, full swings and, you know, take their time and see what happens.
Did you ever read Josh Hamilton's biography?
I have not. No,
that was something I was reading. I feel like I was in elementary school or something. And that's some pretty serious themes.
Well, yeah, the stuff he dealt with early on in his
but it's super interesting story. I mean, yeah. I've always been enamored with Josh Hamilton, just the rise and the fall and just, you know, everything. He was so good for such a short time, and you look up his MVP season and those numbers are ridiculous. But yeah, those are hitters. We're here to talk about relief pitchers, though. So as excited as we are about the Home Run Derby today, we're going to talk about relievers once again. We'll look at the news and notes from the past week. We'll talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks. And then we're going to pick some relievers for the All-Star game. We should see those rosters coming out in the next week or so. So we want to get ahead of that and say these are the guys that deserve it. These are the guys that we would love to see in the game, and maybe talk about a couple of the guys that might be selected that we probably wouldn't select if we were on the committee, but based on traditional stats and stuff, that'll happen. So we'll focus on the All-Star game here, as it is just 2 weeks away from the day that we are recording. So let's start off with the news and notes, beginning with the transactions. We got a lot of injuries this past week, some significant, some less significant, but we'll run through them all. We'll start with the guys returning from the IL. Tyler Kinley was activated from the 15-day IL after missing 2 to 3 weeks with elbow inflammation. Carlos Carrasco was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. And in other Braves news, we'll talk about one of the injuries. Robert Suarez was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation. Hurston Waldrop was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. But the Braves get one guy back and they lose an even more significant part of their bullpen in Suarez.
Yeah, it's not the best trade-off, but at least they're getting Kinley back when they lose Suarez. So, yeah, it's hopefully they're just trying to play it safe with Suarez. It sounds like it's nothing serious, but yeah, they're behind him. It's you've got Iglesias and Dylan Lee at the top, and Didier Fuentes has been pitching well, but his velo has been kind of dipping the last couple weeks. I wonder if he's hitting a wall here. It's definitely, it's not the same amount of innings as a reliever, but your usage is, you're pitching more than once or twice a week. So it does change. It's a different fatigue, but it's still a fatigue level for a guy like him who's not used to this. So yeah, I mean, they got to really lean on Kinley now. James Karinchak's still there. I guess maybe he can take a step forward, but even with the injuries here, they still have a ton of depth, and they have, you know, these relievers turn starters or starters turn relievers. I guess Grant Holmes is in the bullpen now.
Right.
That's Ronaldo Lopez back. Yeah. Ronaldo's back into the rotation, which I didn't understand, but I mean, he didn't look great out of the bullpen. But yeah, I mean, there's, you know, even a guy like Ian Hamilton's not the worst, you know, sixth, seventh option in your bullpen. So yeah, Braves should be okay without Suarez for a while, but long term, they'll definitely need him back for a potential playoff run.
Yeah, I mean, think the bullpen is the least of their worries right now. Their offense is floundering. The rotation, like you said, is relying on Ronaldo Lopez. I mean, behind Chris Sale, it's just a disaster with Bryce Elder regressing and Martin Perez just hanging on for dear life. And Ronaldo Lopez trying to figure things out. So hopefully the Braves can turn it around. But for everybody else in the NL East, they're probably happy to see the Braves sort of coming back down to earth. Mm. In other National League East moves, Gus Varland was optioned to the minors and Zach Kent was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. That was a bit surprising given Varland's usage this year, but his results recently have not been great. And in other Nationals news, we had a couple of injuries to southpaws. Richard Lovelady landed on the 15-day IL with a tricep strain, and Mitchell Parker was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation. And Parker has a grade 3 UCL sprain and will likely undergo season-ending Tommy John surgery. So two big blows to the Nationals bullpen, and they're without Gus Varland now. Riley Cornelio was recalled from the minors, and so was Carson Palmquist. So Palmquist provides another southpaw to this bullpen that's now going to be heavily reliant on PJ Poulin.
Yeah, have fun. Good luck with that. But yeah, this bullpen has just been as bad as we thought it would be, and these injuries don't help. The Varland struggling doesn't help. I don't know what answers there are there, but it's not internally. So,
whoa,
I hope
you talking bad about my guy Justin Lawrence, who got a save last week.
That's where the Nationals are right now. That Lawrence is on his third team and he's getting a save right away.
Right away.
They're on pace to shatter the blown saves record. I guess we can call it for a team in a season. By about 15 blown saves. So,
wow.
Yeah, they're playing. It's such a shame. They're 500. They're going to be above 500 after tonight. They're going to beat the Red Sox, and this is the bullpen situation. So hopefully, I mean, just take Aroldis Chapman with you on your way out of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
That could be fun. I mean, you know, Jose Ferrer, at least I just really annoyed by how the Nationals, like Jose Ferrer is sitting there having a really good season with Seattle, and what Harry Ford's hitting 200 in AAA for them. So I just, you know, I don't know. Just go get, they need two relievers, maybe three, if they want to make a real run at it. But the lineup's legit, and they have an okay starting rotation that I think with a decent bullpen could get you, I don't know, see what happens. You just need a bullpen though. This bullpen's not it.
Yeah, I think Chapman is the one who seems like the best fit in my mind. And I don't know if that's just like I've played too much MLB The Show. And so I've like seen players in the wrong uniforms and I just envision him.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess so. I mean, at some point, for me, it's easy to imagine the W on Chapman's head. But we'll see how that pans out. I mean, if they keep losing, then it might be tough for them to convince ownership to buy in at the trade deadline, but the Nationals definitely need to address the whole pitching staff because their rotation is awful as well. Let's go to the Brewers, who activated Jared Koenig from the 15-day IL. He missed more than 2 months, almost 3 months, with an elbow sprain. So he'll return to the Brewers bullpen, giving them another lefty to support Aaron Ashby. But the corresponding move is a little bit disappointing, as Craig Yoho was optioned back to the minors. They're yo-yoing him up and down between AAA and the majors. So Jared Koenig back, which is cool, but Yoho back to the minors.
Yeah. I know Yoho is, and he's throwing harder this year, which is nice, but the fastball's still it's not great. And as good as the changeup is, I'm not sure if that fastball is ever going to be good enough for him to make the most out of how good his changeup can be. So he's probably destined to be an up and down reliever for the you know, foreseeable future at least. Koenig's a guy who I thought maybe was gonna have Tommy John. He had like a very, I think he just went the rehab route, and we'll see how long this lasts. But he's at least gives them another lefty after they lost, you know, Zerpa and Drohan's in the rotation now, so they definitely could use the left handed depth behind Ashby. But yeah, it's not really much of a, don't think he's going to be the same holds, you know, league option that he was, you know, last year, but he's someone to keep an eye on, see how he looks.
Why is Yoho's four seamer not considered a sinker? It looks it has so much horizontal movement.
Yeah, it really is. I know it is more of a sink. I mean, I don't know if we're splitting hairs. It's a two seamer. It's not really, it's not a four seamer. It's it's at least it should be classified as a sinker. But
yeah, I mean, there's potential if it's not considered a four seamer, in my opinion.
He's mixed in another. I think he's really throwing a cutter or a slider or two. So
cutter.
There's something there, and the changeup's still really good. So I don't know, maybe, you know, he's just one tweak away with that fastball to figuring it out. But I'm not totally out on him. It's just, it's tough, especially in that bullpen with how deep they are when healthy. Mm-hmm. It's just tough to break through.
Yeah. Also 0% ground ball rate on the sinker. So he's not throwing it in the right spots is probably what it is.
He's throwing it like a fourth. Yeah, he is. I mean, trying to live up in the zone with it, maybe.
First percentile high location. He's throwing it low. I think it is a sinker. I think it's mislabeled, but regardless, I think it would grade out better as a sinker, but still 5% swinging strike rate's really not going to cut it, especially when you're giving up all fly balls. So I don't know. I still see the potential, and I'm definitely on Yoho a little bit convinced by the minor league numbers more so than his stuff. So I think that skews it a little bit, but let's move on to our last transaction in the NL Central, as Ryan Fernandez was activated from the 15-day IL after missing about 4 weeks with lower back pain. Ryan Stanek was placed on the paternity list in the corresponding move. But Fernandez is a low leverage reliever. He's shown a lot of swing and miss this year, sub 2 ERA, but the Cardinals have not yet deployed him in high leverage situations
until tonight.
Ooh, what happened?
I'm just looking at the box score real quick. They went Liberatore went 5 innings, and they went Soriano to Romero to Fernandez, and now they have O'Brien in for a save. So Fernandez got the 8th, but I think he came in to bail out Romero, who struggled. So Fernandez has some pretty good numbers, especially from the, you know, strikeout department, but I don't really believe that's, you know, something that's going to stick around for him. Stuff wise, it's pretty average. So yeah, we'll see. It is interesting though that, he got his first hold of the year. Maybe, I mean, that bullpen is pretty wide open. Even O'Brien has not been great lately. So, perhaps. Stanek was out. I think Stanek's on. Right. So maybe he's just filling in for Stanek. It's someone to keep an eye on. Just not too exciting for me. Jose Fernandez.
Ryan Fernandez.
Ryan
RIP Jose Fernandez.
Yes.
All right. Let's move into the injuries from the past week. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen, discussing reliever injuries from the past week. We'll start with Jaden Hill, who landed on the 15-day IL with shoulder tendonitis. Seth Halverson was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. Not the biggest blow, but especially like in terms of fantasy, but Jaden Hill has been a key contributor to the Rockies bullpen. He leads the team with 11 holds, and he's been decent for a Rockies reliever, but it's hard to be that great when you're walking 13% of the batters you face, and especially in a park that boosts BABIP so much, you're bound to have just a terrible whip.
Yeah, I mean, no one to trust in that bullpen still, but I do think, he'll has something there. Same with, I mean, Halverson too. I want to see these guys in other teams. I know. Please. It's weird. Like Halverson, I think he has better splits at home. A lot of these guys have better splits at home, but I think, you know, get them out of that organization and out of that ballpark. And there's something to be said there. We thought Justin Lawrence was going to be saved when he left though, and that didn't happen. Same with Jake Hurd. So I don't know. Maybe it's not
all
it's cracked up to be. Yeah.
There's always the exceptions. Jake Bird hasn't really gotten a chance, has he? The Yankees have just kept him at Triple A most of the year, but I guess 30 appearances this year. But you're right, 4.62 ERA is not spectacular. He was pretty good with the Rockies before they got rid of him. All right, next we've got Steven Matz, who was placed on the 15-day IL with an ankle sprain. Michael Grove was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, and then subsequently optioned to the minors in favor of Trevor Martin. So Matz struggled as a starter, got moved to the bullpen, and now he's injured. I don't think this is going to have a huge effect on the usage in the Rays bullpen, though.
No, he was pretty bad moving to the bullpen. It almost got worse for him. Clevinger's already there as a lefty, and even like Cam Boozer's been pitching better than Matt's was. So I think they'll be all right from the left side in that bullpen.
Let's go to the Reds bullpen. Tony Santion was placed on the 15-day IL with an oblique strain. Those usually keep pitchers out for about 4 weeks, so we might be without Santion for a month. Zach McCambly was recalled from the minors and then subsequently optioned to the minors for the return of Emilio Pagan, who missed almost 2 months with a hamstring strain. So Pagan activated from the 15-day IL. He should immediately slot in as the full-time closer for the Reds.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of swapping Pagan for Santillan, but it's tough because Santillan was pitching much better lately. I finally kind of figured things out. And they need both of them at their, you know, at their best realistically, because we still have questions as to who's getting the ball to Pagan in the ninth. And you look at Pagan's numbers before the IL stint. I mean, he wasn't pitching, you know, he wasn't, you know, shutting the door every night exactly. So
yeah, he was bad.
Yeah. So, I mean, still question marks here, but the one thing we do know is Pagan's back. He'll be the closer for now, and he'll probably have a pretty long leash because no one else has been deserving of taking that closer role there.
Right. I mean, we talked about it last week, but there's also the possibility Pagan gets traded, just given that he has a player option for next year. The Reds might want to get out from under that and trade him away. I think it's probably, I don't know, it was a 2-year, $20 million deal. So maybe it's $10 million as well. So I'd have to confirm that, but I assume it's probably not crazy. I think we talked about it last week. It was maybe $13
million. Yeah.
Yeah. So Pagan could get traded. The Reds are definitely out of it.
Yeah. A team that, can afford to take that on next year potentially. And hopefully we can get him to a better pitcher friendly ballpark given his fly ball rates.
Mm-hmm.
And the home run rates. So, the Nationals wouldn't be the worst spot. Anyone for the Nationals wouldn't be bad.
Right.
And that's not even that's not a terrible number for next year. If you're, and especially, I mean, we don't know what the CBA is going to look like, but I don't know, just like what a 10 to 13 million for a potential closer is nothing. It shouldn't be anything for most of these payrolls.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're not spending their money on anything else, so they could definitely afford Emilio Pagan. Sticking in the NL Central, Phil Maton was placed on the 15-day IL with knee tendonitis. The corresponding move was David Peterson coming over from the Mets as he was acquired via trade. But the injuries did not stop there for the Cubs. So Phil Maton to the IL, Hobie Milner to the 15-day IL after he's undergoing an appendectomy. He's getting his appendix removed, so he's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks. So they'll be without Hobie Milner for a while. Tyler Ferguson was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, Ethan Roberts was placed on the 15-day IL with forearm inflammation. Gavin Hollowell was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. But boy, this Cubs bullpen cannot catch a break right now. Their injured list bullpen, it might be better than it's definitely better than their major league bullpen. Daniel Palencia, Phil Maton, Hobie Milner, Ethan Roberts, Riley Martin, Hunter Harvey, even Porter Hodge from the preseason. It's just, they cannot catch a break right now. Luckily, Jacob Webb and Caleb Thielbar are still healthy, so they have a couple guys to rely on in the late innings.
I'm not even sure if Thielbar is that healthy. I mean, his velo has been dipping, but he's still pitching. He's giving them innings. Because behind them, it's Trent Thornton, Ryan Rolson, Tyler Ferguson, and Jordan Wicks. And Jordan Wicks as a reliever, maybe that's something. I don't know. We'll see how that works out. But, I do like Rolson and Jacob Webb. It's really, really thin for this again, another team that will need bullpen help if they want to make some sort of run, some sort of noise this fall. So, Webb should be able to hold. I still believe in Webb holding the fort for the next until Palencia returns. I don't think we're getting anything out of Phil Maton this year. I mean, maybe it's this. The knee has really been an issue all year. But he like gave up on his cutter and now he's like leaning on a sinker, which isn't like he throws a sinker at like 90 miles per hour. And it's not it. Like the cutter sweeper gimmick he had was pretty much all he can, that's the only thing he can really go with and that will work. So Yeah, I don't know. They can't count on him, and who knows about Hunter Harvey? And yeah, I think we'll get Palencia back, but everyone else, who knows? So,
well, hey, Aroldis Chapman, 10 years ago, traded to the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, that could be. They brought in Drew Pomeranz too, a minor league deal. So,
okay.
I don't know. That worked last year for him and the team, so we'll see. But yeah, they'll probably have to make a more significant move this next month.
All right, reinforcements coming to the Cubs within the next few weeks. Now we'll go over to the Padres, who placed David Morgan on the 15-day IL with knee inflammation. And luckily, the corresponding move is a good one, as Bradley Rodriguez was recalled from the minors. Glad to see him back in the majors. And this Padres bullpen is really incredible. We were talking about before the pod that Wandy Peralta has a 1.69 ERA on the season, which is incredible.
I don't believe it, so.
I thought maybe I had misread it, but no, it's still right. The Padres bullpen is great, though. So Bradley Rodriguez will be in low leverage situations, and they probably won't miss David Morgan that much, despite how pretty decent he is as a reliever.
Yeah. Even without, I haven't heard anything about Jeremiah Estrada, but yeah, there could be some leverage use for Bradley. I think he was just, I don't even know if he pitched or threw it all in the minors. I know they just wanted to give him basically some time off, so they just mm-hmm. I think they optioned him to like the complex league just to give him some time off. So I really don't trust Jason Adam right now that much, so I wouldn't be shocked if Bradley Rodriguez were to work his way into the high leverage mix. But yeah, there's so many options in that bullpen, even the guys you're not used to hearing about, like Wandy Peralta, Yuki Matsui.
Sub 2 ERAs from both of them. Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, Matsui's been really good. And they're paying him pretty. They're paying both of those guys a decent amount. So, yeah.
They were smart. Big brain move from AJ Preller.
5-year Peralta deal was crazy at the time, but I guess it's working out.
Yeah. It is. All right, let's go to the Twins, who placed Anthony Bonda on the 15-day IL with a lat strain. He's expected to miss multiple months. So at this point in the season, this point in the season, we probably won't see Bonda back until September, if at all. So maybe if the Twins make the postseason, then we could see Anthony Bonda back. But neither of those seem very likely. So that's a big blow to the Twins bullpen that has struggled to find consistent relievers. Luckily, Yoandrés Gómez has been rock solid. Andrew Morris has sort of emerged in that bullpen as well. And Taylor Rogers is the glue that is there. He's the glue that keeps the bullpen back.
Keeps gluing. They had finally like figured out something with Gomez, Morris, and Bonda. That was a really good trio they had. And right as they started to figure things out, you know, Bonda, I didn't realize it's a multiple month injury. And either way, he was either going to help them if they were going to, you know, try to make a run here, or they would get a nice piece for him at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
He was throwing much harder. I don't know if that had something to do with it. He was throwing a lot harder than he usually did. Now you're stuck with Funderburk and Taylor Rogers as your lefties there, which is definitely a downgrade. Who's the lefty that they, Kendry Rojas. I still think maybe he could be an answer for them as a lefty out of the bullpen.
I like him more as a reliever than a starter for sure.
Yeah. So, that's going to be all starters turn relief. That's what we kind of projected at the beginning of the year. It's going to be guys with starter experience becoming the focal point of this bullpen. And already Gomez, Andrew Morris, and, you know, Travis Adams is already kind of working his way into that mix too. So I would expect Rojas to be the next one. And then, maybe others. So this bullpen has figured it out a little bit, at least. Bond is a big, big loss for them. Sneaky big loss.
All right. Next, we've got Keegan Aiken, who was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow discomfort. Josh Walker was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. So that gives them another lefty to support Grant Wolfram. But Keegan Aiken is just really fallen off a cliff this year. He was one of the more underrated, unsung heroes of the Orioles bullpen the last few years, but 5.68 ERA, sub 15% strikeout rate this year. The Orioles might be better off with him on the injured list, to be completely honest.
Yeah, he started showing a little bit better improvement. The stuff was looking a little bit better. But yeah, all of a sudden, I mean, it seemed like they had a pretty good group of lefties to choose from here. And now all of a sudden it's thinned out with, you know, Dietrich Enns is not even on the 40 man. He's in AAA. He's not pitching that well.
Mm-hmm.
Aikens on the IL and wasn't pitching well. And Grant Wolfram's been not the same guy we saw in April. He's been okay. But yeah, there's definitely some needed help here on the left side now. But yeah, I don't think Aiken's a huge loss for them, especially with how he's been pitching. But yeah, now a lot of focus now goes on Grant Wolfram to get those key lefty outs.
Yeah, and they're going to be selling at the deadline anyway, so I don't think they're going to be too focused on winning when the time comes.
Mm.
All right, and our last injury placement was Anthony Bender being placed on the 15-day IL with a shin stress reaction. He's been one of the best relievers in June, and his sweeper has been incredible. Zach Brzezicki was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. We definitely talked about him in the past as a potential prospect for the Nationals. He's got a really weird spelling of his name, Brzykczy, which is just, you know, all over the place. But he will enter the Marlins bullpen as a low leverage righty, as I mentioned, Anthony Bender to the IL, which sucks because I know we were liking what he was doing this year.
Yeah, and it's a weird injury, and this is the only guy I've ever seen this injury was, maybe. He suffered it last year in August of last year, and he missed the rest of the season. Oof. I don't know. I mean, they, like, you know, they weren't going to rush him back in September when they were out of the playoffs, so who knows how long this is. I don't know if we have a timetable yet, but yeah, he had been awesome for them. I mean, again, I thought he could sneak into the All-Star game potentially when, you know, he's one of those reserves that gets, you know, is a fill-in for someone who doesn't go. That sweeper is like one of the best pitches, technically the best pitch in baseball this year. So, yeah, it's a tough blow for them. They do have depth there. I mean, Michael Peterson's been awesome lately. Another underrated guy that they've, they've trusted this year, and he's pitched well for it. So I think you have Peterson, and, you know, Fauché's been a little bit better lately too. So they'll probably survive without Bender, but that's, definitely not what they want to see, especially if they're looking to, we'll see what they are doing at the deadline. Cause if they do trade, if they do sell, Bender would be on the top of a lot of teams' list, and I think they would be open to moving him given the 2 years left on his deal, or 2 years of arbitration left, something like that. We talked about it last week. I forget. Yeah.
I think they should keep pushing for it, though. They're 500, so hopefully the Marlins are still in it when the time comes. But that'll do it for our news and notes from the past week. Now we can head into our three up, three down section, where we talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks. Did the W from weekly in front of Rick. Yeah. Almost did it again. At Rick's weekly closer ranks, which you can find over at pitcherlist.com. Let's talk about the risers, starting with Brian Baker, who has been one of the most consistent closers in baseball this year. Sub 2 ERA, 21 saves, 28% strikeout rate. Why is he moving up your ranks, Rick?
I think just more so, yeah. Consistency to begin with. I think I was, you know, based on some of the metrics recently, I was like, all right, there's probably going to be, we're probably due for a bit of a regression hit here, and it hasn't come yet. And I don't, the fastball velocity just keeps getting better. The changeup's still been awesome for him. In a perfect world, I would like to see the slider return and be something for him. He's just really kind of given up on it. Mm-hmm. Which is, I don't quite understand. It's not a bad pitch. But maybe, you know, maybe in the second half we'll see more of it. But yeah, I just, you know, he's just been super, super solid. And, you know, other guys like Chapman, Kate Smith recently have been very, you know, more volatile. There's a little bit more of a worry with a guy like Cade Smith and Chapman, obviously, because he could get traded. We don't know where he's going to be in August. So, I just, you know, still no competition in Tampa Bay. And I have like a sneaky suspicion Tampa Bay is going to kind of make a significant push this year and bring in a guy like Chapman or, you know, a significant reliever. But I think unless it's Chapman, I bet you Baker holds on to that role. At least he should. He's deserved it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Our next riser is Trevor McGill, who has clearly won the closer battle with Abner Uribe. And if you look at his numbers, he's honestly got the best underlying metrics of his entire career. He's striking out more batters than he has since 2023, lowest walk rate of his career since his debut with the Cubs back in 2021. He's got a career high swinging strike rate. And really the only concern is that his fastball velocity is down a mile per hour from last year, but hasn't really mattered. Trevor McGill's been incredible.
Yeah. And it's back up. I mean, this in June, it's been the velocity's back. He's throwing 99 again. And now he's just been, he's been unhittable for the most part. Since he took over the closer role, I'm going to take out the one game in Colorado because that doesn't count. That's not a real place. Over his last 16 innings pitched, 5 hits, no runs, 2 walks, 23 strikeouts from him. That's, the dominant Trevor McGill we've seen in the past and what we're used to when he's healthy and, throwing strikes at a reasonable rate. So, and Abner Uribe has been pitching a lot better lately too, but I think McGill has a pretty, he's definitely got a stranglehold on this role for now. As long as he's healthy and, not walking guys, I feel comfortable with McGill as a closer. And Uribe, I want Uribe to pitch. I mean, as long as Uribe's pitching well, that means we're going to get more clean save chances for McGill because they'll be able to get the ball to him in the ninth.
Right. Our last riser is Andrés Muñoz, who's been really up and down this year. The ratios reflect that as well. 4.91 ERA on the season, but he's looking a little stronger this past couple of weeks. He's not allowed a run in his last 5 appearances. He's only walked 2 batters against 9 strikeouts, but we've seen him do this multiple times this year, have strings of 5 outings or so where he doesn't allow a run. He doesn't walk too many batters. So what has you moving him up this week?
I feel like this might be there might be something like significant with the pitch mix change. He's throwing his fastball more. I mean, there were games where he was just throwing, 19 sliders and 2 fastballs earlier in the season. And like, I get like his slider is like amazing. It's a great pitch. I understand. But like he also throws 100 miles per hour.
Right.
And like, he needs to learn. He needs to be able to, he needs to feel comfortable throwing that fastball. I feel like there's just a renewed confidence in him with his fastball, or he's now throwing that more than his slider. And he's just, bullying hitters with 100 miles per hour. So getting him back to that closer to 50-50 pitch mix, having him have confidence in, throwing his fastball for a strike, I feel like he's headed in the right direction and hopefully in for a big second half here. I know the one issue, I mean, I'm not really concerned because the velo has been going up actually, but like last year in the second half, his velo really took a dip. He was down to like 97 by the end of the year and then basically gave up on his fastball in the postseason because he just had nothing left in the tank. So hopefully that velocity is here to stay, or at least for a little while. I think Muñoz is in the right direction.
All right. As those guys rise up the ranks, others need to fall to accommodate them. Our first faller is Cade Smith. Rick, Cade Smith leads baseball with 26 saves. How can you move him down the list?
The volatility recently, this is kind of the same time this happened with him last year too. Mid-season fatigue thing, because we know how the Guardians love to overuse their relievers. So the velocity was down for a couple of these outings and then it came back up, but even still there's something with his fastball. The stuff's down. He only threw his splitter. He didn't even throw a breaker the other day. Just noticing some weird things in these outings, which he's been struggling in. he'll probably be fine. He probably needs an extended break. I don't know if they give him. The issue is that they have, you know, Sobrowski hasn't been pitching well, and mm-hmm. Gattis has been struggling, and really, like, you know, there's just not many guys there that they can rely on outside of Colin Olderman, and for the most part, Cade Smith. But yeah, just hasn't been as dominant from Cade Smith as I had hoped for. You know, the whip's in the 1.2 range now, which is just fine, but that's not like an elite closer to me. I know that he's leading the league in saves, and, you know, Carlos Estevez led the league in saves last year. So
hey, don't compare him to Carlos Estevez.
I know he's not Carlos Estevez, but I just there's been some little warning signs. I don't know where things are going, or, you know, I don't know if he needs an IL stint or just like a, you know, an extra couple days off, but the fatigue issue is definitely a concern given how they use those Guardians receivers.
Yeah, I mean, you're right to point out his usage over the past 3 years, which is comprises Cade Smith's entire career. He's appeared in 186 games, which makes him the second most used pitcher in all of baseball. During that time, he's ahead of guys like Brian Abreu, Jeff Hoffman, and teammate Hunter Gattis. But who do you think is number one as the most used reliever over the past two and a half years?
Tyler Rogers, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And he's somebody who throws like 84 miles an hour. So when you're Cade Smith and you're throwing so hard, that makes sense. It's interesting also to see guys like Brian Abreu, who's completely lost it this year, Jeff Hoffman, who's been really unlucky. But a lot of these guys that have been used a lot recently have struggled. Scott Barlow is not even on a team anymore. He's seventh with 174 appearances.
Yeah. I mean, Hoffman, Hunter Gattis, Jason Adam, those guys are not having. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely something to this, and the Guardians are—they're always the team. Even before, I mean, Francona was the same way. With like, I remember going into—I don't know what year it was—but Brad Hand had like 25 more innings over the past 2 years than anyone else. And like, there's no way. And that's when like Brad Hand just kind of fell off a cliff because like, you can't. I mean, it's just this isn't sustainable. So yeah, that number for Cade Smith is definitely a concern, not only just games. I mean, he has the same amount of innings as Tyler Rogers over the past 3 years. So he's first in innings pitched and second in games. I mean, hopefully he can get through this. I don't know. It's definitely a concern, and we'll have to see. Give him a week. It doesn't, I don't know. He shouldn't pitch in the All-Star game if he makes it. I would say that's one of those things. Like, just give him that week off, man. He needs it.
Yeah, give Cade Smith a break. Come on. Our next faller is Aroldis Chapman, who has seen his ERA skyrocket. I think the last time we talked, it was under one. Maybe it was the week before that, but he went to Coors. He got blown up, and then on Sunday, he got blown up again. So now his ERA, oh, gosh, everybody panicked, 2.19. It's huge, but do you just have him moving down because he's not as dominant as he was last year when he was – maybe the best closer in baseball based on his results?
Yeah, I mean, the stuff's been inconsistent. Like, you know, he did show in that first game against the Yankees this weekend. He still could throw 99 when he needs to. And then it kind of was, the velocity has been fluctuating. The command is not what it was last year either. It's not back to the concerning levels of, you know, Chapman command, but yeah, there's just the strikeout numbers are down, the walks up from last year. That whip is, you know, more or less what he was at before he came to Boston. So like he's still a really good reliever. He's not the guy he was last year. And he's gonna get traded. I don't know what the role is gonna be. There's a lot of teams that would probably use him as a closer, a lot of teams that would use him as a setup guy. So, you know, that uncertainty. We're starting to get to the point where July is tomorrow or today. If you're listening to this, it's July. So, trade deadline's just around the corner, and we have no idea what his role will be in August.
That's fair. Lastly, we've got Paul Sewald, who is fallen down your ranks. He's, I think, been very unlucky this year. The whip at 0.93 suggests he should be pitching better than a 4.50 ERA. It feels like he allows a lot of home runs, but that makes sense considering he is not a ground ball pitcher. He's got the lowest ground ball rate in baseball at 18%, but he does have a 200 BABIP, which that doesn't really make sense if you're a big fly ball pitcher. You're likely going to have a low BABIP. Actually, now that I'm saying that and catching up with my brain, that should be the other way around. That's a good BABIP for a pitcher. And that makes sense because he is a fly ball heavy pitcher. So it does feel like the home runs are a bit extreme and it should come back down to earth. But with an XFIP that's north of his ERA at 4.5, maybe just his reliance on fly balls makes him prone to those blowups, or not even blowups. It's just he seems to just have saves where he allows two runs all the time because he just will give up a home run or two.
Yeah, there's the home runs. I mean, it's kind of I feel like he's like Emilio Pagan-ish. I feel better about Seawald than Pagan, but it's not it's the trend has not been, it's been a bit of a concern. He has had an issue with non-save situations. I know last night it was a save situation, but and the home run wasn't even on a bad pitch. It's still, that just kind of goes to show that he is homer prone with that pitch mix of his. So, you know, that, and I don't know, this is Arizona team. If they look in the mirror, they should probably realize that they're probably not contenders this year. I mean, you have Marte and Carroll, but like that's really it. Not too much you can trust in the rotation, and the bullpen has been okay. It's been treading, it's kind of treading water now, and you thought you were going to get Puck back, but that's not maybe going to happen. So yeah, you know, Seawald would be, they would get a nice return for him, and probably they probably weren't expecting a whole lot from Paul Seawald this year, but you can get a nice return at the deadline for him if you do decide to sell. And again, 50-50 at best if he ends up being a closer wherever he goes. So yeah, I'm not totally out. Again, like you said, the whip's still under one. It's the ERA is basically like, you know, a walk and a home run, or a bloop and a home run, and that's just inflating the ERA or ERA. Mm-hmm. So he's been better than the ERA shows, even with the low BABIP. But yeah, it's still a little bit concerning with the last week or so from Seawald.
All right, that will wrap up our three up, three down section. To recap, our risers were Brian Baker, Trevor McGill, and Andrés Muñoz, and our fallers were Cade Smith, Aroldis Chapman, and Paul Seawald. Now we'll head into our main topic and discuss our picks for the All-Star game amongst relievers. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. Let's talk about the relievers that are deserving for the All-Star game. We'll start with the American League. And I think there's a group of four that are sort of stand out among the rest. Louis Varland is the obvious choice. He's been one of the best relievers, one of the best closers in baseball this year, if not the best. Definitely an argument between him and Mason Miller. But if we're just talking about the American League, I think Varland stands out among the rest. Jacob Latz has been incredible. Brian Baker, too, who we talked about, and the aforementioned Cade Smith. So that's our group of four guys that I think are almost guaranteed to get into the All-Star game.
Yeah, I think, you know, those top three definitely should be, which is crazy because, like, those are three guys no one was drafting. And
right,
those are your three, like, you know, Varland, Latz, and Baker. The ratios are phenomenal. They're all have ERAs under two, all have whips under one. Smith's the one that's, you know, he's got the ERA up at 320 now, or 305 with a 120 whip. But he leads the league in saves, and it's really just been this past week has definitely inflated those ratios. So I think Smith's probably safe given the save numbers. Again, I don't think he should pitch in it because he probably needs some rest. But I think we at least get those top three better be in. If Jacob Latz, I swear I'm gonna be so mad if he gets snubbed. And same with Brian Baker. I mean, that would be, I don't think you can snub either one of those two. They've been so good.
Yeah, I was talking to you pre-podcast about watching Ryan Dempster on MLB Network, and he had Jacob Latz as his fourth underrated All-Star pick. So if Ryan Dempster is in on Jacob Latz, then I think he's a pretty mainstream pick right now. So yeah, he's probably pretty guaranteed. 1.76 ERA, 27.5% strikeout rate, and 17 saves for Jacob Latz. Pretty crazy to see him miss out on the rotation, but still make the All-Star game as a closer. And the Varland ascension has been incredible. Brian Baker, I know we were in on, but not fully convinced with Griffin Jacks there in Tampa Bay. So crazy the season he's had. And then, as you mentioned, Cade Smith, the MLB leader in saves with 26. A couple of borderline guys that could go either way depending on how the committee votes. And I really don't know who votes on this, to be completely honest. But
coaching staffs and, teams. We should have looked this up. But, yeah, it's probably – I think it's the coaching staff of the team. I don't know. There's coaches involved, and it's team people in baseball. It's not fan vote, thankfully.
Yeah, I always find weird why they let us vote for offense and not pitchers. But
they shouldn't let the fans vote for anything after this year.
Why? I haven't looked at the numbers.
Canada, Toronto is going to it's just going to be the Blue Jays lineup because all of Canada is voting for the Toronto Blue Jays. So,
yeah,
Andrés Giménez is going to
lower the percentage of how much it affects.
That's what. Yeah. Or just, I mean, I don't know.
Make it feel like we're doing something.
Yeah, sure. I guess. Yeah.
It is crazy. I mean, yeah, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. starting over like Nick Kurtz and Ben Rice and stuff.
Yeah.
Crazy. Mm. But I think Aroldis Chapman is a guy that definitely has a case. 2.19 ERA, 16 saves, 30% strikeout rate. He's been pretty reliable all year. He's a very well-known name. I also think if we're talking about well-known names that have pitched well but don't really have the sample size to really deserve the selection. Josh Hader has been really great since returning from the IL. 0.75 ERA, 44% strikeout rate, and 7 saves. So if the conglomerate that's voting on this sees Josh Hader's numbers and says, you know, that's going to get more viewers into the All-Star game, we could see Josh Hader and Chapman, both of them with their fair share of off-field issues.
Yeah, I mean, Chapman's whip is not ideal for me, and I don't know. The strikeouts are down from him, but the name and the saves could make him at least like a replacement for someone. Same with Hader. I don't think Hader is like Hader could be above 10 saves by the time we get to the All-Star break, so he just got his 8th right now.
Wow.
So, yeah, I don't know. Again, yeah, like you said, like name, you know, and just, you know, that's a name, that's a draw. So he's been pitching well since he returned. And like we saw guys last year, like Jacob Mazurowski with limited innings make the All-Star team. So I wouldn't be shocked if Hader was an injury replacement or something.
All right. So that leaves some guys that maybe are deserving, but are almost guaranteed to not make it, where they're either setup men or they're lesser known names, guys that we have enjoyed watching this year, guys that have pitched well this year, but aren't exactly the epitome of an All-Star candidate. So, Rick, who are some of your personal picks for the All-Star game amongst American League relievers this year?
I mean, I like, you know, Grant Taylor's ratios aren't the best, and he doesn't have a ton of saves, so he's not going to make it. But stuff-wise, like, you know, again, we're talking about guys like Jacob Mazurowski making the game last year because he throws 100 and whatever, and everyone's awed by that, and I get it. So, you know, Grant Taylor has insane stuff, throws 99 with a ridiculous curveball. So when he's on, he's one of the best relievers in baseball. He's just he's been volatile this year, as he was last year as well. But yeah, that's just like a fun arm to see in a showcase game, essentially. You know, that's the type of guy you want to see. So from a stuff standpoint, I have like Grant Taylor. I mean, Garrett Whitlock's just been steady as a reliever. He was a big part of the World Baseball Classic, you know, USA team. For a reason. So I feel like, you know, he's not going to get a ton of saves now, but he's still he's had a solid season, very good reliever. Steven Okert, no one's talked about his numbers. His ratios are really good and his strikeouts great. I mean, it would be funny to have, like, if you're got like some deep left-handed pocket in the National League lineup, to bring a guy like Okert in with his slider to go against like Kyle Schwarber and Bryce, you know, it's like a tough left-handed, a pocket. That would be a fun kind of, you know, thing to see, because Okert's slider is one of the best in baseball from the left side. So that would just be, you know, strictly a matchup-based thing. But, you know, Rico Garcia is another one, struggled recently. I 2 weeks ago, I probably would have said he should make the team. Now I'm kind of out on him. He hasn't been pitching as well. The stuff's taken a hit, but you know, the numbers aren't far off for Rico Garcia. Colin Holderman's numbers, though, super underrated guy. And we talk about all these Guardians relievers, and Colin Holderman's come in this year, I think, in a minor league deal, and he's been quietly their most consistent reliever all season long. And he's kind of like the opposite of Oker. I think Holderman's the guy you want to use against righties as kind of a specialist. But again, that would be a fun and very deserving with his ratios. And then another guy who's probably doesn't have enough innings, but Tyron Guerrero for the Red Sox. We're talking about a dude who's 36, you know, journeyman, throws 101 miles per hour. He's put up incredible numbers so far. It hasn't been even 20 innings, but the numbers are insane from him this year. The stuff's crazy. Again, just for that factor of like, here's a guy who's going to throw 101 with the, you know, slider and a changeup, and let's see him go against the best hitters. That just, you know, fun factor there with Tyron Guerrero. And it's a cool story too, if that would ever, you know, given A, we were not spelling his name right for 35 years, and B, just the journey he's been on and where he is now. It's just be cool.
Yeah, I think those are some good selections. Definitely some mix between some fun names and some names that are generally deserving of an all-star selection. I think Grant Taylor probably has a legitimate chance of being selected, and I think Garrett Whitlock as well. The rest of the guys are definitely some fun names that would be cool to see in the all-star game. So let's move over to the National League now, and we might have some more deserving options than
the National League is stacked. Yeah.
Superior relievers from the National League. So let's start with the four guys that are guaranteed to make it in our books. Tanner Scott for the Dodgers has been great this year, filling in with Edwin Diaz on the injured list. Scott is a 2.10 ERA, 11 saves, and a 33% strikeout rate. Dylan Lee, the only non-closer that we believe will be guaranteed a spot in the All-Star game, and he's been maybe the best reliever in baseball. And I still think there's so many people. He might be the most underrated reliever in baseball, maybe the most underrated pitcher in baseball. Yeah. Sub-1 ERA, 0.97. He's got 15 holds and a 33% strikeout rate. Incredible season thus far from Dylan Lee. And it's not like he's doing this out of nowhere. He's been good. He's been doing this for 4 or 5 years thus far. Mason Miller is an obvious selection for the Padres. Throws harder than just about anybody, and 0.78 ERA on the season, 50% strikeout rate and 21 saves. And lastly, Yoan Duran has had his true breakout season. I mean, he's been incredible throughout his career, but this has been the best of the best, as he's finally figured out how to strike out batters. 40% strikeout rate, 21 saves, and a 1.57 ERA from Yoan Duran. So Tanner Scott, Dylan Lee, Mason Miller, Yoan Duran should be guaranteed spots in the All-Star game for the National League.
Yeah, and that's a good luck. I mean, imagine just like the closing things out with Durant and Mason Miller. But even like the two lefties in Tanner Scott and Dylan Lee too are obviously tough matchups as well. And yeah, again, it's pretty clear in the AL, but there's so many other guys here in the NL that could make a case. And I think if Robert Suarez wasn't hurt, he's definitely in the mix there as well. Same with Anthony Bender. Both those guys getting hurt right now, they're probably not going to, you know, be on the roster for the All-Star game. But the numbers, I mean, Suarez had probably one of the best ratios out of a reliever this year. So yeah, there's just so much depth on the NL side here.
Right, Suarez 0.56 ERA. Not the biggest strikeout rate, but he's definitely been super reliable. This Braves bullpen is absolutely cracked. And if we're talking about guys who are maybe on the borderline that might get in based on the traditional metrics, then we got another Braves reliever that has been great this year, Raisel Iglesias. A little bit smaller sample size because of an injury earlier this year, but he's got a 1.37 ERA, 16 saves, and a 28% strikeout rate. There's also the case for Aaron Ashby, who leads all of baseball in wins. I think he's at 11 wins right now. I don't think we have any starters north of 9. So
yeah,
really, I mean, incredible production out of the bullpen for Ashby. The ratios aren't really there. He's got a decently high whip, a 3.24 ERA, but he strikes out a lot of guys. He gets a lot of wins. So if the voting committee looks at his wins and says, yo, he's leading baseball in wins, you got to have him in the All-Star game.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I mean, Ryan Dempster had him on his 5 picks for the All-Star game, 5 underrated picks, but Ashby was the 5th one before Jacob Latt. So even he's recognizing that Ashby is a little bit deserving of that selection.
I mean, the ratios make me, I'm out because of the ratios with Ashby, but from like, I don't know, part of me, like, you know, there's still a good strikeout rate there. Stuff's like really good from him. So I'm not totally out, but those ratios just don't seem deserving. And if we're like, we can't be talking about wins, especially, I don't know. Wins are just such a fluky, especially the way
he, from a reliever.
Yeah, especially for a reliever. I mean, it's I don't even know if it's fluky because it's been consistent and he's at 11 now, but
yeah, I mean, he's done that throughout his career. It's not real. Too.
Yeah, it's not like a real, this isn't a real thing. He's not going 6-7 innings and, like, you know, striking out guy. You know, he's not like, starter wins are a lot more important than reliever wins. So especially since I know some of these wins have been because he's blown leads or saves, and then they've, you know, so it's like, that doesn't count, man.
Right.
So yeah, and Iglesias, I think up until the past like month or so, I was definitely in on him, but he's starting to, that whip's creeping up. He's allowing a lot of base runners, not getting as much swing and miss. So the numbers are not trending the right way for him, but yeah, he's definitely a borderline case. If they do go with more than four relievers, he could be that fifth guy, or as a replacement, that could make sense as well.
All right, so to wrap this up, let's talk about some of your personal picks for the National League guys that maybe aren't at the top of the list to be voted in, but either because they have really fun stuff, or they have fun stories, or they've just been good this year, they just don't have the traditional numbers to back that up. Who are some guys that you think deserve an all-star selection but likely won't get in?
I mean, maybe even in a borderline case, I think Luke Weaver could make, I mean, his ratios have been awesome this year. Strikeout rate at 29%. He's looked unbelievable recently, especially. I mean, the velo's at the highest it's ever been for him. He's sitting like 96 and a half now, 97 with his fastball. Just like been a strikeout machine lately. So he's, you know, he would be going into the game at, like, you know, his best form as well. So I feel like Luke Weaver should be in the mix here. You know, Trevor McGill got off to a slow start, or really bad start. So the ERA is still at 3.38, but he's brought that whip all the way down. That whip's below one now. So, you know, and with a 33.3% strikeout rate, and he's got saves to his name. So I feel like McGill should be back into the mix. I didn't think this would ever happen after the start he had in April, but I feel like McGill's worked his way back into the all-star mix. Super surprising one, but again, this is like, you know, we're talking about Jacob Mizorowski last year, who leads baseball in fastball velocity over the past month. It's Edgardo Henriquez. It's not, and everyone talks about how, you know, Mizorowski's, I mean, obviously from a starter, it's crazier. I get that. But Henriquez, you know, throwing 102 on average right now, just been dominant lately. Got a save for the Dodgers the other day because they're starting to trust him in high leverage spots. And he's not, you know, he throws hard, but he can also get strikeouts and swing and miss with his stuff too. So, you know, that's a fun one. And the numbers back it up too. So, you know, another one, tough start for Adrian Morahone. He's had to work his way out of the, you know, the April bad luck he had, but the whip's now under one for Adrian Morahone. Strikeout rate at 30%. No one has better peripherals than him. And again, a guy who it's deserving, and also like he's throwing 100 miles per hour from the left side these days as well. So, you know, just when you're talking about power on power in an all-star game, Morahone makes a ton of sense. Same with Michael Peterson for the Marlins, and Anthony Bender is not going to be able to make it. You have a guy like Michael Peterson who's come this season. You know, a big time fastball from him with, you know, he throws like 98, but he's got really good, you know, shape on that fastball, and he's 6'7", 6'8". So he's just, you know, a big dude throwing hard. Just, you know, really deserving, I think, of a, at least, you know, some sort of consideration for a, you know, all-star bid here. Last one, you know, weird one, but Oscar Brazaban's ratios this year are crazy. You've never been a big strikeout guy, still not really a big strikeout guy, but the strikeouts have been up the past month. from him. I mean, he's just like a sinker, changeup, slider guy. But the numbers themselves, I mean, it's hard. It's just the numbers themselves. Really, if he was in the AL, I think he might make it into the All-Star game with his numbers right now. So just a really sneaky good season from Oscar Brazoban. Who would have thought that? But yeah, those are my, you know, 5-6 picks here in the NL to potentially this worth some consideration. Maybe one of these guys sneaks into the All-Star game, but yeah, these guys are all, for one reason or another, I think would be fun to watch.
That's right. All right. So that's all of the relievers that should be considered for the All-Star game at this point in time. Obviously, there's tons of guys on the injured list that we would have had on this list, and maybe some guys that emerge over the next couple of weeks with some good performances, or, you know, maybe somebody underperforms and drops off the list to open it up for somebody else. But I think we got a pretty good sense of who we might see pitching in the All-Star game. It's in Philadelphia, right?
Yes. Yep.
All right. So Citizens Bank Park might host some Louis Varland outings and some Mason Miller on the other side and some other friends in the mix. But that's going to do it for this episode number 167 of the In the Pen podcast. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your socials and let everybody know what you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me at I Am Rick Graham on socials. As always, just working on daily RP streamer, RP roundup articles, and getting out the reliever list, which didn't come out on Tuesday this week because I think Nick's starting pitcher ranks came out on Tuesday. Mine are going to come out Wednesday. So today, if you're listening to this podcast the day after we recorded, July 1st, but usually it's on Tuesdays, closers, saves, holds, saves plus holds. So yeah, just doing the reliever thing for the next little while.
Yeah, he sees relievers in his sleep. It's relievers all the time. Don't be surprised if he names his daughter Reliever Graham. That would be pretty cool. You can follow the pod on socials at In the Pen Pod. You can follow me at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the pitcher list, stats, player cards. You can also listen to me on the First Pitch podcast 4 days a week. And you can read my SP roundups on the weekends, not this weekend, but getting back to it next weekend. So 2 days a week on the SP Roundup. You can also find more of my work over at baseballhq.com, where I do playing time analysis for the Diamondbacks, Angels, Giants, and A's. But if you want links to all of my work, you can find that over at crumplerbaseball.com. That's going to do it for this episode 167 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.